ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Oh, just while I have it in my mind. I request those of you who didn't listen to the lecture I gave on pronunciation to listen to it. And those of you who did listen to it, to listen to it again. Because it's the same mispronunciations are going on. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya should be Padaya. Paschatya should be Paschatya. And so on. I pointed out to Chitta Hari Prabhu that your boys are saying Gauravibhava. It should be Gauravibhava. That's still going on. There are others. There are also so many. It's a foreign language to us. But as we say the same words and the same mantras every day, it shouldn't be that difficult to learn how to pronounce these words. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Actually, you'll see in Bengali it's written Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami Virachit means well composed by him, but he himself says that it's actually written by Madan Gopal, by Krishna himself. Anyway, Antyalila, texts 129 through to 31. Actually, I'll just read one of them. There's a whole section here, which could be read, but I'll just read one of them, which is text 130. Tathapi bhakta shabhav marjada rakhan. Tathapi bhakta shabhav marjada rakhan. Marjada palon hoy sadhur bhushan. Marjada palon hoy sadhur bhushan. Tathapi bhakta shabhav marjada rakhan. Marjada palan hoy sadhur bhushan. Okay, I'll read the verse before this because tathapi, this is in opposition to something else. So you have to know what the something else is. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is speaking to Sanatan Goswami. Yadapi o tumi hao jagat pabon tomar sparshe pavitra hoi dev munigan tathapi bhakta shabhav marjada rakhan marjada palan hoi sadhur bhushan. My dear Sanatan, although you are the deliverer of the entire universe, and although even the demigods and great saints are purified by touching you, it is the characteristic of a devotee to observe and protect the Vaishnava etiquette. Maintenance of the Vaishnava etiquette is the ornament of a devotee. Text 131. Marjada longhane lok kore upahash ihalok paralok. Dui hoi nash. If one transgresses the laws of etiquette, people make fun of him, and thus he is vanquished in both this world and the next. Text 132. Marjada rakhile tushta koile moramon. Tumi oiche na korile kore konjon. By observing the etiquette, you have satisfied my mind. Who else but you could show this example? There's some very fine points here to be considered. Maryada, there are often very fine points to be considered in consideration of maryada, which is translated as etiquette, but as with many words coming from Vedic culture, it doesn't have an exact translation into English. Because Vedic culture is based on Shastra, and modern life, which is, the English as spoken in the modern world, is based on concepts largely divorced from theism. So etiquette is considered to be some arbitrary rules which people follow, just because they have different people evolved in different ways in different parts of the world, so their culture evolved differently, and therefore you have different cultures. But they don't really mean anything, but anyway, that's what people do. That's the anthropological explanation of how culture exists. And it may well be true in many places. And it's true also in Vedic culture, because the times are different. There's Satya Yoga, Treta Yoga, Dwarpa Yoga, Kali Yoga. So there are differences in Vedic culture also, and it does evolve, or rather devolve. But just like in high culture in England, so I'm told, I never saw anyone do it, but I'm told that if you have your soup in a bowl, you have to tip it away from you and then take the soup out of it and then take it, and that's considered very good etiquette. Don't tip the soup toward you, which is the, if you're going to tip the bowl at all, it would make a lot more sense to tip it toward you. But according to, there's no reason, is it, but that's just considered high culture. And of course there's what you could call natural culture anywhere, that respectable people are to be respected. And there's still something like that in the Western world, although the basic culture is to it's not a culture of respecting others, but many people still respect, for instance, the Queen of England, good Queen Bess the Second, and many people don't. But the idea is, and in a company, you have to respect the boss. You may not like to, you may not feel any personal respect for him, but you have to maintain the etiquette, otherwise you don't have a job. In the army, you definitely have to observe the etiquette. They won't kick you out of the job, they'll just kick you up the backside. And probably in the army now, there are even in the army, there are probably rules in the West that you can't do things like that. So they send an army in to fight, and then when they kill all the people, they afterwards have a war tribunal, war crimes tribunal. You shouldn't have killed these people. So anyway, getting off subject here. Vedic culture is Shastra-based. So the concept of maryada, as with everything, I mean, there are things to be done because it's stated by Shastra, and you don't question why it should be done, and you don't fail to do it. It's sacred. The sacred is present in every sphere of life because everything is directed by Shastra. So just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave instructions to clean your teeth in the morning, so it's not directly a sacred activity to do, but when you're doing it, you can remember Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to do this. It's part of Vaishnava behavior. It's part of everyone's behavior. But it's given by Shastra. And there's a good reason for that, to maintain the body, which is naratanu bhajane mool. The human body is required for worshipping Krishna. And if you're going to interact with other people, you don't have a smelly mouth, and you're going to worship the deities, also for the same reason. Actually, this, I came across some discussion on a website which was very interesting, so I'm going to echo some points in there, where it's pointed out that, first of all, here Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says to Sanatana Goswami, you are so pure that you can purify the whole world, and simply by your touch, the pure people of the universe, the demigods and the munis, the great thinkers, not just thinkers, but muni means you, not just a philosopher, but you have to be a sadhu also. It's not like in the West where anyone can do anything and still be called a philosopher. But you have to have good qualities also. But you can purify them. You're so pure, you can purify even those who are considered purifiers of others. But still, the nature of a devotee, swabhav means he doesn't think, well, what's the rule here? Maryada means what's the rule, you have to follow it. But he doesn't, he just does it automatically. He maintains the maryada. That is the ornament of a devotee. So a devotee is ornamented by all good qualities, and here Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is pointing out maryada rakhon. What had happened leading up to the incident that led up to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saying this was that one time Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was taking lunch at Puri, lunch prasadam. The word lunch, it's madhyana prasadam. That's better. Midday prasad. So the word lunch is just, you can jump out of work into a lunchette cafe and shove something down your face and get back to work. Taking prasad is a different bhav altogether. So he was taking prasad in Puri at Yameshwar Tota. Where's that? Does anyone know? Tota means the seashore. Yameshwar, where is that? That's maybe, well, there's a famous Yameshwar that suggests it's a Shiva temple. The famous Shiva temple in Puri is Lokanath, but that's inland from the sea. So I'm not, where is that Yameshwar Tower? Anyone know? Should ask Madhavananda. He knows everything about Puri. So, and he decided to test Sanatana Goswami. And he sent a message to Sanatana Goswami, come and see me. So Sanatana used to stay on the other side of the Jagannath Mandir. He was just visiting Puri, and he was staying with Haridas Thakur, because they were both bahishkrit. They were both rejected from standard Hindu society. Haridas Thakur was known as being a Muslim by background. It's not exactly known what his background is. Some suggest that he was born in a Brahmin family, but he was raised by Muslims. Whatever. He's known as Muslim by birth. And Sanatan was from a very high-class Brahmin family from Karnataka, born in Bengal. But from an early age, he had been forcibly engaged in the service of the government, which was Muslim, and he'd taken a Muslim name. And externally, he appeared to be very much like a Muslim. although he also worshipped Madan Mohan before he went to Vrindavan. You can still see the temple there. I went there in 1977. I haven't been there since. At Gore, the old capital of Bengal, near to Ramakeli. So he was worshipping Madan Mohan, but he was rejected from Hindu society, because Hindu society, the idea is that if you have contact with Muslims, then you're too impure to be even a Shudra. You're just out, that's all. And many Hindus were forcibly converted to Islam. At the time of Indian independence, many Muslims in Kashmir, they wanted to reconvert to Hinduism, whatever that means. And Pandit Nehru asked the Shankaracharya of Varanasi, and he said, "No way, idiot." Sorry, we shouldn't say that about a respectable sadhu, but it was a very bad move. In every way, a very bad move to make. The whole problem there wouldn't be there now if they'd been allowed to be Hindus. So anyway, Sanatan Goswami came to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This was, by the way, this is during Jyeshta month. Do you have that word in Tamil? Jyeshta? Is it? That's the next month after this month. It's the hottest month of the year in most of India. Now is what? Which is it? In Tamil anyway, your months are all different, but Jyeshta is the second month of summer. It's the hottest month of the year. So it's very hot at midday. Yeah, Vaishakha and then Jyeshta, the 2 months of summer. But I think in Tamil Nadu, is what, Chitri now, is it? Yeah, so their months are out of sync with, they're 1 month behind the rest of India. Always have to do something different. So, it's extremely hot to go outside. And sadhus mostly walk with bare feet. Sanatana become a sadhu. And especially in a holy place, many people they won't wear shoes at all. Puri's holy place. So Sanatana had to come at midday, and the floor is extremely hot. One reason for wear, in the West people can't understand this, but one reason for wearing shoes, the main reason is to protect from the heat of your feet and underneath. So everywhere is very hot, but especially the beach with the sand is going to be extremely hot. And if you walk on that, your feet are going to get burned and you might just pass out from the heat, because you have the direct sun on your head, and then you have the much hotter than that is the sand underneath, which becomes so hot from the sun. So Sanatan came. He was very happy to get the word that Prabhu is calling me. And then he came, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked, "Very good, you came. Which path did you come on?" And he said, "I came on the beach, because you can either come through the town on the roads, which the roads won't be so hot, and there'll be some houses and shade trees." So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked, "Why did you come by the beach? You could have come by the road." But Sanatan, his regular practice was not to go on the roads around the temple, Jagannath's temple, because he felt that he is aspṛśya, adṛśya. He is untouchable and not to be seen, even by respectable people, like those who are worshipping Jagannath. And that would be the rule, actually, that untouchable people were not allowed, even in the area of the temple, because the the people who are worshipping the deities, they shouldn't, they're called, those people are called untouchable. Why are they untouchable? Because by touching them, you become impure. And then you can't worship the deity. And you have to take a bath, change your clothes, and say some mantras to become purified. And actually, such an attitude in relationship to a Vaishnava is extremely offensive. But Sanatan would follow that. He didn't go in that area because he wanted to. He didn't want to. Even if he did go, that would cause some uproar. He'd probably be chased out. At that time of day, at lunchtime, there wouldn't be so many people around because it's so hot. But still, the priests would be coming and going. So Sanatan, he said, I came by the beach. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, why? You could have come by the regular road. And Sanatan said that, no, if I go there, then the priest will touch me and it's very bad because I'm so impure. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said this, that even though you can purify all the worlds, you maintain the etiquette. And you have thus satisfied me. Now this is quite curious, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he himself, in his teachings, we'll find right here in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he said that in cultivating devotional service, Varnashram Dharma should be rejected. And he quotes, Sarvadhaman Parityaja Mamekam Sharanam Raj. But at the same time, he didn't disturb the social order. In some ways he did. For instance, he accepted Haridas, Rupa and Sanatan as his prominent followers. But he didn't organize a protest against them not being allowed in the temple or being treated as inferiors by the priests of Jagannath, who, although they have direct access to Jagannath, they don't have it in the same way that Rupa, Sanatan and Haridas have, who they are very intimate devotees in every sense. They're completely pure Vaishnavas. Now, we shouldn't make comments about the priests of Jagannath. We have to be very careful because for all their strange, it seems a lot of their behavior is not like that of a Vaishnava. And even philosophically, they're not Vaishnavas. They're more like, they're impersonalists. But somehow or other, they're engaged in the service of Jagannath. And that should be respected. And they know that should be respected also, that we are direct servants of Jagannath. They're very conscious of that. But by Shastric analysis, we can understand that Sanatana Goswami is in much more advanced position. He is, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu here calls him Jagat Pavan, the purifier of the whole universe. You can purify even the Munis. Well, they're already pure. You don't become a Muni, and you don't get the title of Muni unless you're a very elevated person. But still, Sanatana is so pure, so intense in love of Krishna, that he can purify even them. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu later, elsewhere in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we'll find that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would regularly embrace Sanatana and say, I feel myself purified by doing so. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself is the very principle of purity, that one can be considered pure if one is Krishna conscious. And he is Krishna. And he is Krishna consciousness. Krishna Chaitanya means Krishna consciousness. He is Krishna consciousness. But he says, and not just to flatter Sanatana, but he feels, I'm purified by touching you. So what is the position of Sanatana? And what are these Varnashram rules? Varnashram is, after all, a system which is meant to it's not really in and of itself purifying, it's more to help people from falling into gross sinfulness. And therefore Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, for a Vaishnava, Varnashram is an obstacle to be hung up on Varnashram principles. But Varnashram, he didn't totally reject Varnashram also. Chari Varnashram ejadi Krishna he bhaje shakarma karite shei ro rave parimaje. He says, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that if one is within the four varnas and four ashrams but doesn't worship Krishna, then he may do his work very nicely as ordained in the Varnashram system. He may follow all the maryada, all the etiquette of the Varnashram system, but he falls into hell. So Varnashram in and of itself has actually got no relationship with Krishna consciousness. But even within Vaishnav society, it may be observed. And actually other sampradayas, they put a lot of emphasis on Varnashram, especially Madhva sampradaya. They take it as a necessity. As the process. They take it as an essential part of the process of being what we would call Krishna conscious. Of course, their whole conception is different in many ways. And in the Ramanuja Sampradaya here in Tamil Nadu, there's a very distinct difference between the Iyengars, the born Brahmanas, whatever's left of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, and those who are not. And even today, those who are not born Brahmanas, they can't worship deities in temples. In the Sri Vaishnav Sampradaya. One of this Navadeep Praneshwar, he was here before. He told me that he'd, in Kanchi, I believe it was, he was offered, because he was offered that you come to one Sri Vaishnav. Yeah, he told me that was at the Nrisimha temple in Sri Rangam. He was offered that you come and serve here and be a pujari. We need pujari, we don't have enough pujaris. They saw he's an ISKCON devotee, and then when he understood he's from a smarter Brahmin background, that, okay, you can come and worship here. Not any ISKCON devotee, but because he's Vaishnav initiated, even though he's from a smarter background, they wanted him to go and worship there. They wouldn't ask you, because you're not from Brahmin family. So it's still very much a consideration, whereas in ISKCON, we don't care about all those things. That if someone's got brahminical qualities, or they can worship the deity. Or if you need someone to worship the deity and someone doesn't have brahminical qualities, throw a string on them and chuck them in the deity room. That's also there. Or if they give enough donation, then you can give them Brahmin initiation also. I mean, being a little sarcastic here. Sorry. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he didn't give much importance. Intrinsically, Varnashram doesn't have much importance. But at the same time, he says here, he tested Sanatana Goswami, if Sanatana on this occasion, when it's the heat, tremendous heat, and actually Sanatana arrived, he didn't faint on the beach, which he might have done, due to the tremendous heat. But he arrived with all his feet blistered. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked, why didn't you come by the road? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knows he never comes by the road, he never passes by that road. But in this circumstance, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu thought, maybe he'll come by the road this time, because it's not at all advisable to go on the beach at midday in the hottest time of year. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very pleased with this. He didn't, as I say, he didn't make a campaign against the Puri Pandas. Why are you mistreating Sanatana Haridasa? He just accepted that this is the natural order, this is the way society runs on. And philosophically he didn't accept it, And in his own personal behavior, he didn't accept it. But for the broader society, he didn't disturb that. And you'll find again and again in the description of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu takes prasad, and he'll call the other devotees, and Haridas will say, "No, no, I'll come a little later." And they'll, or sometimes he'll call Govinda, his servant, that you come and take prasad and so on. And Govinda says, "No, I have some other work to do. I'll come a little later." They're just making an excuse because they don't want to do maryada langan. They don't want to transgress the etiquette. Now, Haridas would never sit and take prasadam with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even though all the other devotees would, because he's feeling that I am fallen, I'm from a Muslim background, and maybe some of the devotees who are not fully understanding the principle or outside people, they will make some protest against Chaitanya Mahaprabhu like this. And Govinda, because he's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's son, and also because he's from a Shudra family, he didn't want to take, even though he's the godbrother of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Brahmananda Bharati asked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that why do you have a Shudra as a servant? Should be a Brahmin servant. Because Brahmin, they have to touch all your things, you have to interact with them. Shudras, they don't know all the rules of maryada, of cleanliness and everything. But he said, well, it's the order of God. It's Ishvara. So it means his own guru, Ishvara Puri, ordered Govinda to come and serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even though it's against the etiquette to have your godbrother serve you, but there's another consideration of etiquette to follow your own guru's order, and his own guru had ordered Govinda to come and serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So often the rules of etiquette, they're conflicting, and then you have to see which is the higher principle and follow that. Now, why did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu do that? Is it he wanted to uphold the social system? Why did he want to uphold a corrupt social system? Well, it seems it wasn't so much that he was upholding it as not going against it. It wasn't that he wasn't prepared to make a disturbance, because when the Qazi in Navadvip, incited by high-class Hindus, had tried to stop the Sankirtan, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu organized a protest march. Which is very dangerous, actually, if you consider that it could have turned into a Hindu-Muslim riot, and it was Hindus didn't do things like that, because even if they outnumbered the local, they could outnumber the local Muslims, but then the whole army could come and just chop them all up into little pieces. That was quite possible. That's what generally when there's an occupation force and people try to rebel, they respond in an extremely harsh way. And there's so many examples, just like in Nazi-occupied countries during the Second World War, if there's some kind of uprising or some local resistance force kills a few German soldiers, say they kill 3 German soldiers, then in retaliation the German army will kill the whole village, something like that. So it's very dangerous, theoretically. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did that, so he wasn't against making a social disturbance per se. But in general, he wanted to uphold the status quo. No, just, all right, let them do their thing and we'll do our thing and we'll chant Hare Krishna and we'll be happy. And why are we going to bother with all those people? They have their conception, they're not going to change. Okay, all right. It could be argued that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to uphold the Varnashram system as it was going on. But that's a bit of a weak argument if you consider that. Well, the thing is, there are spiritual forces at work and there are material forces at work. The Varnashram system is there. And according to the Varnashram system, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu should not have intimately mixed with, he should not have embraced Sanatan and Haridas. He shouldn't have done, because he's a sannyasi and a brahmana in the highest position of Varnashram. And these people, Haridas and Rupan Sanatan, within the Varnashram maryada, etiquette, even a Shudra wouldn't embrace them. They're out. And when we talk about Shudras as being low class, but there are others who are just completely outside the system altogether. They don't have any rules. There's no rules. They just do whatever. No one cares practically, as long as they don't kill people, which some of them do, used to do anyway. If you're born in a dacoit caste, then you're a dacoit. That's all. They'd also worship Kali. They'd capture someone and offer them to Kali and then kill them. So they're also following Hindu religion. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was actually very pleased by this. Even though he was very pleased by Sanatan's behavior, even though he didn't himself uphold such a conception, and he was against it. A conception of superiority by birth. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was at Prayag, he crossed over the river and visited Arayal, where Vallabhatta was staying. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went with Rupa Goswami. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu warned Vallabhatta, he said, "You better be, you know, be careful about him, because he's very fallen." Because he could understand Vallabh's mind. And then Vallabh himself, because he's a great exponent of Srimad Bhagavatam, quoted so many verses. Vipra dvisharagona, what is that? Aravindarabha. What is that? The boys, can they say it? They're learning this Prahlad's prayers. Vipra dvisharagona yuta aravindarabha. Sapachanvarishta. Huh? Prananpun. What is it? Manyet. Prananpunati. So Vallabhatta quoted this verse, that even if one is a very high-class Brahmin who has all the qualities of a Brahmana, except the really essential quality of being devoted to Krishna, he is less than someone born in a family of dog-eaters who's a great devotee. Because the person born in a family of dog-eaters who's a great devotee can purify everyone, whereas the person born in a Brahmin family who's not, and not only born in a Brahmin family, but has all the qualities of a Brahmana, such as Shamodama Tapashocha. If he has all these qualities, but he's not a devotee of Krishna, he can't even purify himself, what to speak of others. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he operated on the transcendental principle, but socially also he maintained some social maryada. But not if it came to the point of stopping the Sankirtan movement. He wouldn't say, "Oh, well, the ruler of Navadvip, the magistrate, has said the Sankirtan should stop. Okay, we should follow." No, he didn't agree to that. But some other rules, which if you consider, it's very cruel to keep a great devotee and they're not allowed to go for darshan of Jagannath. They're living in Puri And they're not allowed to go for darshan, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted. And himself, who is Jagannath, would go daily and see Haridas. So, that's better position. And for darshan, we can see Patit Pavan Jagannath standing at the just at the entranceway. There's, you can see without going inside. And at the Snana Yatra and Rath Yatra, then everyone can come. Actually, I don't know if traditionally everyone's allowed at Snana Yatra. I presume so. Definitely at Rath Yatra, everyone's allowed. For mlechas like us, if you want to have a good long darshan of Jagannath peacefully, don't go for Rath Yatra in Puri. Go to the Snana Yatra. There's less people, and he's in one place for a long time. Then they take him. Then he gets a cold, and he goes away. Then only the dayatas can see him. So, yeah, this raises some questions. The Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he didn't want to disturb the social order. But let us go on with our Vaishnavism and we won't disturb the social order. So, how does that translate in the Western world? Interesting. Should we just go along with the social order? Which is, from the Vaishnava perspective, completely sinful. Actually, at the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there was already a lot of sinful activity going on because the kings were Muslims. And they, if they weren't killing brahmanas, at least they'd be killing cows. So that was very sinful. And it seems that the Hindus, at the time, of course, you know, I'm using the word Hindu in a very broad sense, not saying that we're all Hindus, but it seems that the Hindus in the beginning, they didn't know what to make of it, because the brahmanas are supposed to worship the king, actually, as the representative of God. But the king is a beef eater, and in some cases, killing the brahmanas. But anyway, it says in Shastra, you have to worship the king. So they're caught out. They didn't know what to do. And then it said that they'd face toward the king while saying Gayatri, toward the king's residence, even though he's a Muslim. Because that's what they do. They're following their tradition. So they don't do that nowadays. But there are all different classes of brahmanas also. So, should we go along with the Western way of life so as not to disturb people? And or should we follow the Varnashram as well as we can? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased with Sanatan for following the Varnashram rules, even though he was outside the Varnashram system. Actually, he was outside it in two ways. One way, from the external point of view, he was rejected. And from the spiritual point of view, he was rejected as being lower than Varnashram, but in the actual sense, he was above it. So in one sense, it was a blessing to be rejected by people who were on the mundane platform. So should we follow the Western way of life? Because after all, in the Western world, especially when the Krishna consciousness movement first started there, it was seemed very strange for people to dress the way that we dress, and to have shaved heads with a tassel hanging off the end at the back, and to sing and jump in the streets, singing something, some strange words which no one can understand. And everything was strange. So some devotees opine that, well, if we want people to be Krishna conscious, we can't make it so different that they might think, well, that's nice, but I'm not going to do that. I can't do that. I'm not going to go around in the streets wearing funny clothes, singing and dancing. And everything, if you follow the devotee lifestyle, then you're just so different from the Western people. It's like we heard that the British in India, they related with the Muslims much better than the Hindus, because the Muslims, they don't... The educated Hindus, means the Brahmanas, they didn't want to go anywhere near them. And they didn't want to invite them to their house. They don't want beef eaters coming in their house. But the Muslims, they could relate with them, because they didn't have those restrictions. Only the Muslims, unlike the British, they didn't eat pork. But I don't think the British ate pork much in India. Anyway, let's not talk about what they did eat. But but yeah, they could invite, and they can give them chicken, mutton, and if they could get away with it, beef also. That's pretty difficult due to the strong Hindu sentiment to kill cows in even during the British period. It's only when India became independent that, by the grace of Mahatma Gandhi, that cow slaughter became widely accepted. So if you're a devotee and so, you know, someone comes to your home, I don't know if they still do it, but you used to have people come every month to read the electric meter. I don't know if that still goes on. So they have to come inside your house and read it. And you say, well, take off your shoes. Would you mind if you take off your shoes? Take off your shoes? Coming in. They can't relate to it at all, because in the Western countries, people walk around in the house, outside the house, with their shoes on. They put their shoes on in the morning, and it stays on till night. No question of taking them off. And they, you know, people just can't relate to it. And on the other hand, you don't want them in your house with all the dog stool and the, everything on the, and everything from the street that they may have picked up, and it's just completely unclean. So maybe we should let people in the house. If we're worshipping the deity in the house and they come in like that, what should you do? You have to make some concessions. I mean, you can't say you're going for, you're going to in the airport and say, well, they want to give you a pat down to check to see if you have, if you're carrying guns or something. Say, no, you can't touch me. Say, okay, you can't go on the plane. That's all. So you have to make some concession, but how far do you go? And to make people feel, not to make them uncomfortable over, the point is that we want people to take Krishna consciousness, but we don't want to make them uncomfortable over what are relatively minor points. You can be Krishna conscious in a suit and tie. Srila Prabhupada said that several times, although he did encourage his disciples to wear what we call Vaishnava dress. But he did also say you can be Krishna conscious in a suit and tie. But then you might say, well, so why don't we... Krishna consciousness doesn't depend on what your clothes are, so why don't we all just have a suit and tie? How far does that go? Are you going to worship the deities in Western dress? Wearing jeans? Or maybe a suit and tie, more respectable. But how far do you take that? And then, if we do, I mean, anyway, we're doing so many strange things like going and singing in the street. So if you wear a suit and tie when you do it, maybe it's more strange. But, well, Srila Prabhupada gave the example of the Charlie Chaplin film, which actually was some other film, of deliberately being outrageous to the extent that other people may want to follow it. So, it is different. Singing in the streets is different. And in most parts of India, it's also different. I mean, you don't get many people. In most parts of India, it's going on the streets singing, it's not a central part of the culture. Bengal, Orissa, yes. In North India, it's a priest. I mean, in South India, there are also Haridasas and this and that, but that culture's largely gone, isn't it? Did you ever see coming around your village people? During Margali months, maybe, they would come around. Different festivals, people would come in the streets singing. Okay, so it is there. But definitely in Bengal and Orissa, it's very, very strongly part of the culture. One Oriya man I was speaking to recently said, he's not very old, he's about 30, I guess. And he said when he was a child, there was the Hari Sabha in every village. And people do kirtan. So it's gone, said that's gone now. So, Hari Sabha means people come together to do kirtan and read from Chaitanya Charitamrita or whatever. So, how much do we adjust? Maybe when people come, we can offer them a cup of tea. Maybe. Would we go that far? Apparently, Srila Prabhupada said that we can serve tea in the guest house in Vrindavan and Bombay because he thought that people wouldn't come and stay if we didn't have that. Srila Prabhupada didn't make such a big thing of drinking tea. He didn't. You don't hear him preaching about, you know, people, they're so sinful, they're eating meat, they're drinking wine, they're having illicit sex, they're drinking tea. You never heard Prabhupada say that. I mean, definitely it's banned for us, but he didn't see that as a great disqualification. And he'd take prasad in people's houses. He didn't like to take in the homes of non-vegetarians, but definitely almost all of the people's houses he'd take in, they'd be drinking tea or in South India, coffee. So he didn't make such a big thing of it. So there we have some insight that Srila Prabhupada did introduce this culture, but at the same time, he did make adjustments. He did speak of cultural conquest, that there'd be a different culture. Krishna consciousness is a different culture. And culture includes many items, include dress is a major factor of culture. So Srila Prabhupada did want to introduce this, but at the same time he actually expressed pleasure with saying if you're preaching in the West in certain scenarios, the devotees they can go in suit and tie. He wanted them to look what he considered respectable, not in. He definitely didn't want us to be the devotees to be identified with hippies. But for preaching to scientists, when Balavanta Prabhu was running for mayor, I believe it was, Prabhupada, he liked to see that. The devotee is there with a suit and tie, very short hair with a shika and tilak. Prabhupada insisted there should be tilak. So that we shouldn't disturb the social order. Yeah, that consideration may be there to some extent. But at the same time, we're talking about cultural conquest. So how can you disturb without... How can you conquer without making some disturbance? And again, we see that although Srila Prabhupada wasn't intrinsically organizing a protest movement, protest in the terms of, he didn't send the devotees to march and make campaigns against slaughterhouses or the Vietnam War or any such thing. But he did encourage the devotees to defy the authorities when they were, same as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when they were being harassed for chanting in the streets. When Srila Prabhupada was asked about devotees who were being arrested in Australia for chanting, Prabhupada said, you just go to jail and you go on chanting there. Just don't stop chanting. And after some time, they'll get fed up of you. They'll just let you go. And they do. I know in London, when I joined the movement, we used to get arrested for chanting. It was just like a normal thing. One time on Balaram's appearance day, we'd all had a big feast, and then we came out in the afternoon, and we were just, the devotees were coming out one by one, and a black Mariah rolled up. A black Mariah is a Ford Transit van painted completely black with no windows except at the back. And it's a police van, and they throw criminals in the back and take them off to the police station. And they just caught as many devotees as they could, where they're all running away, and threw them in the van. No seats. You just... So that was a normal thing. But nowadays, devotees just go out, distribute books on Oxford Street in central London, the same place we're getting arrested. The police just gave up. They'd do Harinam, and we just go on and on and on doing it, and they got fed up, and we just go on with what we're doing. That's all. But you have to follow some rules. Just don't go on just at the side of the pavement so you don't obstruct the traffic. There's some kind of agreement between the police and the devotees like that. They have to show, you know, we are the police after all. Okay. So do we disturb or don't we disturb? Well, if we are to preach Krishna consciousness, we must disturb. Just the very fact that our message is disturbing. And if we try too much to make it non-disturbing, then we lose our message. The message is against everything that materialistic people believe in. So if we want to make it palatable to materialistic people in all respects, then we don't have our message anymore. And our whole way of life, some materialistic people will appreciate some factors of it, but the people who are more demoniac, definitely, they don't like the idea of that we should dedicate our life to God. And even if they think we should dedicate our life to God, not that God. We believe in Jesus or Allah. That's not God, that blue thing. That's not God, they'll say with great conviction. They can't give any philosophical reason why Krishna can't be God, but they're convinced, and they have the power of Jesus, so they know. So, I didn't even look at this. I'm just speaking off the top of my head. Let's see what some other points here. How far do we go along with Indian things? I mean, after all, Varnashram, it is to a large extent Indian culture. Well, we're not going to watch Bollywood movies or Tollywood movies. Is it necessary for a devotee to take Ayurvedic medicine? I don't think so. You may want to, but you may think it's more shastric to do so. It is slightly, but the higher principle is if you're sick, get healthy by whatever means works. So we may accept Western medicine or Chinese medicine or whatever, although Indian traditionalists say whatever's in China came from India originally. We don't know, but that's what they say. Vegetarian, definitely. That's well accepted in the West. Wear Indian-style dress. Well, there are arguments for that and against that. It has its preaching facility. Srila Prabhupada said himself that when I came, the Ramakrishna Mission sannyasi Nikhilananda told him, now you're here, you have to dress in Western dress. It's too cold for the... Prabhupada said, no, I never did that. And actually, when Prabhupada was walking in New York City in 1966 in the Lower East Side, one university professor saw him and walked up to him and said, are you from India? Which was something to say. I mean, it's pretty obvious, I guess, he's from India. But anyway, they struck up a conversation, and Prabhupada invited him to come to his meetings, and that university professor went on to edit Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is, and other books. He was Hayagriva. And he brought Kirtanananda, who was also, whatever he may have been, he was instrumental in getting the movement started, and Umapati and Achyutananda. So, I mean, that would, if Prabhupada hadn't been dressed in those clothes, then Professor Howard Wheeler wouldn't have come up to him and asked him. Similarly, in Moscow, 1971, I believe it was, or 72, Shama Sundar was walking around in devotee clothes with a long shika, which probably wouldn't be the recommended thing to do in communist Russia. I know myself, I was in kami clothes, but I had some bright colored socks when I first went in 1986. It was still the communist rule, and some police just for wearing some bright colored socks, it looked a little unusual, because I guess you can't buy bright colored socks in Russia. So they stopped and said, started storing something in Russian, and then we had a devotee with us who spoke English and said, they're tourists, and said, oh, okay. So you can't imagine what it, walking around in dhoti and with a shaved head. Khrushchev had a shaved head, right? But with a shika. But anyway, one young Indian man saw, and his friend, who was a young intellectual, saw them, and they approached him. And Shamasundar brought those two to see Prabhupada in his hotel. And Prabhupada preached to the young Russian. And he preached to him for 3 days and initiated him. And then he spread Krishna consciousness all over Russia, all over the USSR. I mean, by his efforts, he started it. So it was a major underground movement going on, which apparently it was reported that when Indira Gandhi met Brezhnev, who was the, for all of you who don't know, he was the head of the Communist Party and the Soviet Union for many years. And he said that the two main threats, he said to Indira Gandhi, it was reported in the Indian newspapers, the two main threats to the Russian youth are rock and roll music and Hare Krishna. And it was just underground, that's all. No books, nothing. Just Prabhupada preached to her. But the point is, if Shamasundar hadn't been dressed like that, then that wouldn't have happened. Of course, Krishna could arrange anything, but the immediate cause was that. Similarly, last year in Santa Monica, I believe it was, a suburb of Los Angeles, a devotee, back to someone or other, back to Brian, I think, was distributing books with shaved head, tilak, and dhoti, clearly looking like a devotee. And all of a sudden, ex-President Clinton walked up to him and hugged him and walked away with the Bhagavad Gita, which Brian gave him. So one of the most influential and famous people in the world, seems he actually had some affection for devotees. And I heard he was at, years ago in Venezuela, I believe it was, there was an Save the Earth summit or something like that. Clinton was there, and devotees were performing Harinam, and he came out of his hotel and waved at them. Of course, politician, you never know what they're up to, but it seems he liked the devotees. So these are just some instances of preaching events which wouldn't have happened if the devotee hadn't been dressed as a devotee. On the other hand, there might, say you want to go and distribute books in some high security or some building where there's security, you might not even get in the building if you're dressed in devotional clothes. So in some instances, it would be better for book distribution to be in kami clothes, and for preaching to scientists, Srila Prabhupada said you should go dressed like that. So there are pros and cons. So how do you decide on the general principle is that we learn from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not to unnecessarily disturb the social order. But if it becomes so intense, then you may protest, and we're not going to give up our devotional principles. Just like devotees in Russia, they were tortured, but they didn't give up their devotional principles. They defied the system and went on printing books, which was an extremely subversive activity in communist Russia. I mean, for a start, you couldn't even get a printing press or a photocopying machine. You couldn't just go and buy a printing press. Every printing press was strictly controlled because they know the power of the printed word. And then you got the printed press. How are you going to get enough paper to print? Because if you start buying a whole bunch of paper, then what's going on? Everything's government controlled. So at great, even to print the books at great risk and great difficulty, and then distribute them, and devotees were doing that, and they were getting arrested and sent off to Siberia. So they defied the system. But in other ways, we may not do. Definitely in the Western world, we're going to have to go against social sensibilities more than in India. Otherwise, you can't start. You can't. As Prabhupada said, I've heard it said that Prabhupada said that if I ask them, you stop meat eating, gambling, illicit sex, and intoxication, they'll say, okay, Swamiji, very nice. You please go back to India. Yes. And Prabhupada sometimes said, I'm surprised the governments are allowing me. If you see what's in Prabhupada's books, I mean, he's calling them, the government leaders, rakshasas, and saying that all the modern societies, it's based on meat eating, illicit sex, and pointing. Worse than calling them bad names from the government's point of view is not just calling them bad names, but actually describing and explaining what's wrong with them. They don't mind if you go and say, well, we don't like the Prime Minister. Hey, anyone can do that in the Western world. But if you give analysis of what's wrong in every way with their society and give them a few names like Rakshasa to go along with it, it's amazing they're allowing it. And actually it's in some place, like in Argentina, the government, they saw our books and they closed down the movement in the 1970s. They got all the books and they burned them all. And they threw all the devotees out of the country because they read some demons in the government, so they read the books. In China, I heard Satyanarayan Prabhu, who's overseeing the BBT there, he told me that to get their books printed in China, they have to have them reviewed. And the person who's reviewing it, he's old, and he said, oh, these books are so wonderful. I wish I'd read them earlier, and I could have joined you. But he said, yes, we'll print them, but you have to take out all the references to governments, all the bad things against governments. Then he said, I would allow it, but there's no way the government will allow this. You can get it printed, but you have to take those things out. If there's anything good you say about governments, okay. But all the bad things you have to take out. So they're going along with that. Later, maybe they can do something. In Iran, the books were published. Bhagavad Gita was published in Iran with government permission. It's amazing what Krishna allows. You know, these people, how they could allow that. The government was harassing in China for years. Now they've cooled off a bit. Probably because those people are reading our books. And oh, I see, because no one's going to follow them because of the four principles. So you needn't bother with them. It'll just be a few people. It's not going to be a mass movement. That's an interesting observation. The Chinese, they're known as being very shrewd people. The tradition of Confucianism. Very shrewd in worldly diplomacy. That's why they don't want to harass us, because what's the point? That's what the Keshav Chhatri, the minister of Nawab Hussain Shah heard that this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this There was that Nimai Pandit. We heard news of him. He was in Navadweep and he did a civil disturbance. Then things cooled down. And now he's walked from Navadweep here, followed by thousands of people. What's going on? He asked his minister, and Keshav Chatri said, the people who told you, they're unnecessarily making bad reports. There are just a few people with him. You don't bother about him. Then he asked Rupa Goswami. He said, he wasn't, the Nawab asked Rupa Goswami. He said, he asked the same question, what's going on? This Chaitanya's coming. Tell me what's going on. He said, well, you're very fortunate. The Supreme Personality of Godhead who's given you this kingdom, who's giving you the kingdom, he's coming personally to your kingdom. And Rupa Goswami said, why are you asking me? You are the representative of God on earth. You ask your own mind, who is he? And the Nawab said, yeah, he's God. So, where are we? Back to... Srila Prabhupada, he did want to introduce what we could call Indian food, Indian dress, Indian habits, like giving things with the right hand. Prabhupada also, he didn't try to teach this to all his disciples, but it is there that he did. It's right in there in the conversations, Prabhupada saying you should use your right hand, don't give with the left hand. So, Srila Prabhupada did want to introduce these things, cultural conquest, but he was also flexible and practical and taking the essence. So how far do we individually adopt this? Should in the West, should we have Western dress? Well, certainly if you're going for a job interview in the West and you're a devotee, it's probably better to go in regular Western dress. Almost certainly. If they ask you, you might tell them you're a Hare Krishna. You might tell them. Krishna Kirti told me when he went for a job with the army. And he had a job, something, writing programs for missiles or something like this. So he said, I'm a Hare Krishna. They're vegetarians. And you're vegetarians. He said, yeah, we're vegetarians, but we're not pacifists. So they gave him a job. He left it. So, Srila Prabhupada is flexible on some points. He didn't insist that you have to have Indian food or Indian dress. But he did say, he did several times, he praised devotees look very nice with devotee dress. When he came from India back to America, in 1967, he went to India, then he came back after a few months. He brought saris for his female devotees. The first weddings he did for devotees in 1966, he insisted that the girls, the brides, wear saris. So he did want to introduce that. But he was flexible also. Some things he was flexible about, but he didn't really want to be. Like, for instance, divorce. Prabhupada didn't like divorce at all, but he didn't really... Well, he did, in one instance, actually allow it. Because he said, anyway, they're going to do it, so what can I do? He didn't like it at all, but he just accepted that these people are going to divorce. They're not... And then he just stopped organizing marriages. Abortion, he never compromised on that. But he did make adjustments. So what do we adjust with and what don't we? Meat-eating, gambling, illicit sex, intoxication. Well, Prabhupada told Hari Kesh when he was going to preach in Russia, Hari Kesh protested, there's only meat to eat there. Prabhupada said, then eat meat and go and preach. And Prabhupada, when he came to when he came to America, he brought some cereal with him because he thought he might not be able to get vegetarian food. And Prabhupada said that I'd rather die than eat meat. But he said, for preaching you can do anything, but don't take it like that, and don't take a license. So meat eating, gambling, illicit sex, intoxication. Well, there are allowances within Varnashram culture. Just like chandalas, they're not really within Varnashram. Brahmins, if we see the Shastra, they used to eat meat. Even today, people born in Brahmin families, for generations, they're eating meat. It's not that all Brahmins are vegetarian. Beef eating, Prabhupada allowed that under certain conditions. Who can say what the condition is? Let the cow die. If you wanted to eat beef, okay. Not really very okay, but if you're going to do it, let the cow die, we'll give you. You won't have to buy, you'll get free beef. So he made some allowance for that. So there are many adjustments may need to be made. On the one hand, we don't want to unnecessarily disturb society. On the other hand, we can't give up our basic principles. We're not going to stop Sankirtan because the government doesn't like it or the people don't like it. Some other things we may adjust or not adjust. That if we're going out chanting in the streets with colorful clothing, many people appreciate that. That is something colorful and different and joyful. So, actually, in the Western world, some devotees, they say that, well, we should have the devotees dressed in devotional clothes, and we can have a few devotees in kami clothes also on the Harinam party. So that people can think, well, I can also join it in those clothes. I don't have to dress like that. But nowadays I see in the West, I don't see there's any reaction of any kind practically. People just treat you, if you go in a shop to buy some cough syrup or something, they don't faint when they see you dressed like, they just treat you like anyone else. They don't, it's just, depends where you are. And if you're in central London, devotees, they look less unusual than a lot of other people. Central London or New York City or somewhere like that. Actually, I did notice one time, because our temple's in central London, then I went out to one of the suburbs and I noticed people were looking at me a little bit. It's the further away you get from the center, the more normal people become. So, some adjustments. How do you decide? Well, individual, if your guru gives you a specific instruction, you can follow that. If your guru tells you, you have to see if that's in. Even if the guru tells you you should wear pants and shirts while on the altar in a public temple, worshipping the deity, I'd have a lot of trouble with that, because it clearly wasn't Prabhupada's standard. I mean, when Prabhupada was here, none of his disciples would go before Prabhupada unless they were dressed in devotee clothes. With the exception, often at airports, Prabhupada would be coming or going, and his disciples would be there distributing books in dressed in kami clothes. So, but if you went for a formal darshan, or if, even informal, no devotee would go before Prabhupada in kami clothes. It's just unthinkable. They wouldn't go. No devotee would go in the temple room with kami clothes on. With the exception, sometimes going out on sankirtan, you on book distribution, you dress in your kami clothes and you go out, but not coming back because you feel all contaminated from being on the street. I know in London when we were doing book distribution, and said we'd have our clothes cleaned every day. We'd put them in the laundry every day because kamis, they'd wear them 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. I think in India also, people who wear pants, they go on wearing them again and again, but we would change them every day because you can't wear the same clothes you've been in. They stink just from the atmosphere, especially if you go into some shop or something, that people are smoking like that. So how now? Then gurus may give someone's name. The disciple may ask, "Well, should I do this or do that?" And the guru, and you know, and they may say, "Well, only an acharya." Sometimes we hear this, that only an acharya can make adjustments, only an empowered acharya. But actually, we all have to make adjustments all the time, and in India also, it's not pristine varnashram culture, if such a thing ever existed. I guess you could say at the time of Yudhishthira, but at that time also there were rakshasas in the name of kings, Duryodhana and others. So some common sense. Srila Prabhupada, he at one time he was asked what to do, and Prabhupada said, "Use your common sense. And if you don't ask, if you don't have any, ask someone who has." But then different people have different definitions of common sense. So this is all, it may all sound like it's so vague, you may come more out of the class more confused than you went in. But the basic principle is there. Anukul yasya sankalpa pratikul yasya varjanam. Do whatever is favorable for Krishna's service and don't do whatever is unfavorable. And then there may be pros and cons. Well, if I dress as a devotee, then some people will like it and some people won't like it. Concerning that, Prabhupada said that you shouldn't... Well, when one of Prabhupada's disciples came to Srila Prabhupada and said that, well, we don't dress in these clothes because people don't like... People are very superficial and they don't like these clothes. Prabhupada said, why should you dress to please superficial people? You should dress to please Krishna. So, there are pros and cons, we have to see. But it is an important principle. We understand from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that he did not want to disturb the social order. Prabhupada did want to disturb the social order, at least in the West, because he saw it as intrinsically demoniac. But even there, even within that, there are some principles which will be... There are many principles in the modern world which would be followed in Varnashram society or any society, which, for instance, respect of secular authority. If they're the police, yeah, you respect them as the police, unless they're stopping you doing sankirtan. But if they're, for instance, if they're clearing the road because there's a bomb scare, you don't say, well, we don't follow that, we don't follow the police, we believe in Krishna. Yeah, you get out of the way along with everyone else. You respect the police. If the police, if you're driving along in your car and a cop comes alongside on a motorcycle, as happened to me last year in LA, then you stop the car and you speak to the policeman and he questions you and you answer him. You respect his role as a policeman. So, okay, that's there. So, yes, some intelligence is required. Therefore, brahmanas are required. People who have some common sense also. That's actually a very important quality, because we have all this Shastric knowledge, but how to apply it also, we have to see. It's a very... I was going to say an unusual situation. It's a unique situation that we're bringing Krishna consciousness to a world in which the culture is so completely different. So there are some thoughts. There could be a lot of back and forth discussion on this. But I don't see that there's like one... Just like this issue of whether to wear what we call devotee dress or to wear Western, secular, conventional dress. There's no clear line on that. It may be different for different people and in different circumstances. And on how you wish to present yourself as a devotee to the world. Maybe you don't want to, although Prabhupada wanted us to, but maybe you feel too shy to do so. You can hide that. All right. You can do also. We're not saying that if you feel uncomfortable presenting yourself as a devotee, then you can be a closet devotee. It means you just don't tell others about it. You can do that also. So like that. Pros and cons. Different strokes for different folks. In general, Prabhupada wanted us to be bold. So going out dressed like that is somewhat bold to do that. Definitely people get to know about our movement. If you don't dress like that, then they don't know. Just like now, if you go in the West, you say Hare Krishna, a lot of people, they don't even know what it is. Last year in America, so there was an old couple in one airport, Atlanta, and they asked me, what is this dress? And I said, Hare Krishna. I said, oh, Hare Krishna, I remember. Yeah, we remember. It's sad. If we dressed in devotional clothes, then people would know. And we did lots of Harinam and did lots of propaganda, then people would know. So you may say, well, people aren't disturbed with us because we don't dress in devotion. They don't even know anything about us. Better they know us and be disturbed by us than not know anything at all. That's my angle on that. Any questions, comments? It's another long class. I'm breaking the Mariada by having long classes and making everyone's schedule thrown out. 3 hours, 20 minutes. You give your Bhakti Shastri classes. Regular classes you give? Bhakti Shastri classes. In the morning class? Sunday morning. Okay, well anyway, I'll be out of here in a couple of days and then just like Ramachandra Puri left Puri and all the devotees. Ah. So, no questions. All right. Time for prasadam. Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.